Portland, what is going on? This is City Talk. You are here with the Portland Gear Guys on our new podcast, where we're bringing you all the things you need to know about the events going on in the Rose City.
At least we think you need to know.
Yeah, events that we think, or people we think we find interesting,
we
that you will find
interesting. That we think you need to know about.
We do. This is Mr. Darwin Barney.
Our and if, first guest.
If actually. You play baseball, you'll know this guy. Or you should know this guy.
Yeah, that
local
might be
legend.
The only reason, yeah.
Local legend. We could get into the cliches, how he won a couple championships with the Beavs, or how he went on and won a gold glove in the pros. But we want to get to know Darwin outside of the baseball career.
Oh. I didn't know we wanted
to. Like how his dad is a dentist, and Noelle, my wife's mom, worked for him back in the day.
My brother's a dentist, too.
And your brother's a dentist.
Yeah. I did 1 year of pre-dental in college, but...
So, this explains why you walked in with floss.
Yeah.
You walked in here with a little floss pick.
So is it, what happens if one of you came out without good teeth?
Then we would slap veneers on it, kind of like we did with mine.
Oh, nice.
Yours are fake?
Well, my teeth were pretty good after braces, you know, but I was, obviously obsessed with teeth for some reason. It must be a family thing. So when I had braces, I would wrap floss around my caps and tighten them myself. And it probably made it take longer.
Wait, what?
So I had the braces back in the day.
Yeah, with the little bands on them, right?
I would run floss through it, wrap it around, tie it, wrap it to the next one, tighten it, thinking that I was speeding up the process by tightening everything up.
Wow.
Probably, screwed it up. I had them for 3 years in high school. It was brutal. But
so then when did you need veneers?
So after that, obviously my dad being a dentist, veneers kind of started becoming a thing, I'd say... 10, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was obsessed with like perfect teeth. My teeth were good. They were great.
They weren't perfect.
No.
Perfect.
So I begged him and begged him. And
Dad, I need veneers.
Dad,
please. Yeah. All I want for Christmas
is
veneers.
But I picked the right color. See, you can't tell they're fake because they're not like chiclet white.
That's true.
So
you picked your tooth color?
The first pair I did, it was the first one he ever did, right? I had it's really interesting. You go into a magazine and you look in there and you're like, I want that set of teeth. And like, they all have names. It's really, it's weird.
So what are yours called?
The Hollywood Smile, yeah.
That is
a Hollywood
smile.
That's what it's called. You know?
What does that mean?
I think it's just square? The shape. Like that tooth right there, the fang tooth, it just hangs a little lower. Or some of them kind of, it just depends on the-
I have a big fang.
The shape.
I have big fangs.
Yeah.
So you got.
Well, you have a smaller right here.
This is a podcast. They can't see what we're pointing at.
Yeah. You're number, right now, you're number six for all you dental people out there. His number sixes
number six.
Are a little small.
So did your dad, how did he get you guys into sports? And then how did some of you fall into dentistry? Or was it like, if you're a Barney, you're doing both?
Well, my mom grew up in Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
and my dad grew up in Portland until he was about 14, 15. Then his whole family moved to Hawaii. His dad got a dean job at BYU Hawaii.
Oh, cool.
He was telling me a story that when they were young, they were dirt poor, 8 kids, and he got a basketball for Christmas, and he wanted to go to college, and they didn't have the money. So he was like, I'm going to have basketball take me there. So he started working on that. He's only 5'6", but he played point guard at mm-hmm. BYU Hawaii. And, that's kind of where it started with the athletic stuff. Met my mom over there. But he coached all of us. I have 2 older brothers and an older sister. So, I was constantly getting beat and everything as a kid. And the day that I started winning and everything was a glorious day.
Mm-hmm.
I think it came a little sooner than my brothers wanted. But, I think that... sports thing was kind of our life. That's what it was. My older brothers did it. My dad wanted us to do it. My mom was all about it. So it was just kind of natural to follow in their footsteps.
Go ahead.
Is your family, are they ever just like fans of sports or were they always just athletes? They always just played and...
I remember watching Blazer Cable back in the day when you had to, do all that. We were definitely sports fans. Mm-hmm. My dad was a big... sports guy. I mean, he ended up coaching like a million teams growing up. Mm-hmm. Him and a buddy started Murray Hill Little League. And they have, 2 or 3 teams have gone to the World Series and, we've gone to regionals and stuff like that. So, he's always had, a big part in the community when it comes to the sports side. So, it was just normal for me to kind of do that And sports were pretty natural for me. So
next week we'll bring in Darwin's dad, it sounds like.
he sounds cooler than you.
He's all right. Crazy. Yeah, he's all right. He threw a basketball at me once at practice.
And was like, you know what? I'm going to get a good
scholarship to college.
I wish I could have done that. Just picked up a basketball and been good enough to go to college with it.
Did you always play baseball or was there multiple?
I played all the sports growing up.
Yeah. Were you always the best?
Ooh.
Like on your teams, was it always like,
we've
got Darwin.
In baseball, it was, you know, it was obvious. In baseball, I would say obvious. You know, there was only one guy that I would say was better than the field around him compared to me to baseball, and that was Chad Barrett. And he was a soccer player at Southridge, and I played soccer as well. And he went number 3 overall in the MLS draft. I mean, just him versus the field, it was different than me versus the field. Mm-hmm. Obviously, soccer, it's a little easier to see the standouts than baseball, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, it was basketball I really had to work at. You know, it wasn't as natural for me. Soccer was pretty natural. Football, I thought, was fake. I mean, I did football for 2 years, and I'm standing in the huddle, and I'm watching my buddies over here just like foaming at the mouth, like, and I'm sitting here thinking, how can I make this work? Like, I want to use my mind and my athleticism, and they're just freaking out, and I couldn't handle how just it felt not real to me. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the most natural sport, football was, just, you know, run and don't get tackled. But all the extra stuff was a little bit too much for me. So yeah, baseball was kind of the right thing for my personality.
When did you zone in on baseball, knowing that was it, and then making those other sports just like conditioning for that? Sophomore year, junior?
I quit basketball after my sophomore year of high school. You know, I started talking to coaches, getting letters, realizing that I should probably gain some weight. As a sophomore, I was like a 145, 150 maybe. So I hit the weight room. I quit basketball, and then all winter I was at the gym, I remember, 4 or 5 hours a day. I couldn't get out of there. You know, I was very hungry at the time. Mm-hmm. Everything that I was thinking was, make it. Let's make it. What can I do to get better? And it was the first time I'd ever thought that way. My whole life, you know, things kind of came easy. So, you know, people around me thought I didn't work hard, you know, because things kind of came easy. So as I grew up, my fear was, I'm not working hard enough. This is too easy. So I just kept working and working and working, you know, and there's a lot of talent out there, but there's, you know, I would say half the guys that have the talent, it's too easy. Mm-hmm. So they stop working. You know, for me, I was lucky that I had a fear of failure and, you know, I was going to work longer and harder than everybody else. I mean, that's when you're 5'9", 5'9 and a half, 5'10 with cleats on. You have to do those things. You have to work and work and work to get where you want to be.
So was that like the same mentality going in? Like when you entered the major leagues, was that kind of the same mentality as like you just felt like you had to keep working to get better? Or was it then kind of like you made it?
Because you weren't a high pick.
No, I mean, I was a 4th rounder. So, I mean, I wasn't that high. I wasn't guaranteed to get every chance in the world. Yeah. You know, if a first round guy these days is getting, you know, anywhere from 4 to 10 million, they're going to get the chance to fail and still make it to the big leagues. You know, I had to hit my way to the big leagues. You know, you led the league in double A and triple A in hitting. And then everyone that knows my career knows that I was a average at best offensive player. And that's just the difference in triple A and big league baseball. I mean, it's the biggest jump you'll see in sports from talent level, just those guys up there. So, I mean, I was by far one of the best players in double A and triple A. And then here I am in the middle of the pack, you know, at best offensively at the big league level. So, there's a lot of ego being checked. You know, you get to the big leagues and right away I was super confident and I rode that confidence for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start getting knocked down, which is the name of the game when it's baseball. And it's, you know, who can respond, who can make the adjustments. And, you know, that's where the stress starts coming. You know, you have to adjust every week. You have to do your homework. You can only ride your confidence for so long. You see a lot of rookies come in and just bang right away. Jay Bruce had like 9 homers in 7 games, his first 7-8 games. And it's like they don't know what to throw you yet. All of a sudden they have video and they have numbers and life changes. Mm-hmm. And then you become just like everybody else trying to scrap away to hit 275. So, you know, that's baseball at the major league level.
I have a buddy that played minor league baseball. Do you have any funny, crazy stories of some weird town that you ended up in double A ball when you pull up to a something.
Well, geez, you know, that's the funny thing about minor league baseball is you're going to these towns. Just, you know, there's, they make Portland look pretty normal, you know, like, gosh, let's see. I can't talk bad about any cities out there, but I will say a funny story about this one time our team and we were in high A, we were playing for Daytona Beach, Florida, Florida State League. And we were kind of, we were in first place, but we were going through a little skid. And so we were like, all right, we got to figure this out. Some guys don't like each other. Like, chemistry is really important in baseball because you have so much time to sit there, mm-hmm. just look at each other and talk. And then if you don't like someone, you're going to just hate them even more. And then, so you can build one way or the other. So for us, we were building in the wrong direction. We had everybody meet out back of the hotel. And that's the beauty of these little hotels. You can meet out back.
Everyone meet out
in
back,
the parking
right.
lot with a pillow, right? So everybody has a pillow. And these pillows are just sunk to the bottom of the pillow sheets, right? So they're getting heavy. And we were just like, all right, everybody, on three, go. And it was like, just hit anybody you want and free for all. So for like 10 minutes, we're going crazy, just like your head's on a swivel. It felt like a brawl. You know, I was in a brawl when Bautista got punched by Odor, and it felt the same where you're just like swivel, swivel, left, right. Anyone that's been in a brawl knows I'm like, you're on a move constantly.
Very
so then we get into a we get into a circle, and every guy goes in the middle, and they say, okay, call one guy out that you don't, that you have beef with. So now these guys are in the middle going one-on-one with pillows. And it's not
what
like...
What are the other guys
yeah, it's
doing?
Not
right?
like, yeah, it's not like an Angels, you know, girls sleepover pillow fight. Like, the like guys were bleeding and it was actually...
The other hotel guests was, are watching yeah, through the windows. Yeah. You know?
We might have been the only team or people in the whole place.
Right, got
you know, let's be real. It was like, it was smaller than Mobile, Alabama, wherever it was. So now the next, we go on a 10-game win streak. After that, you know, it's just little things like that. Just
need
did
to
everyone
take
like
out on everyone.
Did everyone like clean up their beef after
everyone
that?
Everyone got along. I mean, everyone called out whoever they had a problem with. By the end, you were like high fiving, like yeah,
that's awesome.
That's how men work, right?
See, you don't get that story in the MLB. Maybe
I have some stories from the major leagues that are similar.
Wow,
but I can't tell them.
I know you clubhouse,
know?
Right?
I could keep
clubhouse
a couple talk. Names out of some. Maybe later we'll get into that.
People just need men just need to duke
old,
it out, right?
A good old pillow fight.
So then that season we ended up winning the championship. And at least two guys came up to me. And I had won back-to-back championships in college coming right in. This is my first professional mm-hmm. season. So when we won this championship, I was like, meh. You know, it's a high A championship.
Four people were
Florida
watching.
State league. Yeah. So these guys come up to me, and they're like almost tearing up. And they're like, dude, thank you for this. I have never won anything in my life. And that's when it kind of put it in perspective just how lucky I had been to go to Oregon State and come up in Murray Hill and just Babe Ruth World Series. You know, some of these guys have played baseball their whole life and they haven't won a single thing, you know, so you kind of put that in perspective and, you know, winning at anything is pretty special, mm-hmm. you know.
How'd they get there then?
Well, they played at like
different.
A JUCO.
Got it.
And they were really good and they were pitchers and this was their first or second year professionally. So there's still a lot of guys. Once you get to like double A, the guys that get weeded out are the ones that don't work enough, the ones that don't want it. That aren't willing to get knocked down over and over and over. Those guys are weeded out by double A. So in high A, you still have guys that are going to be a lawyer. They're going to be, you know, working at McDonald's. You have all kinds mm-hmm. of people that don't have the right mentality to be a big leaguer, but they have the tools. So they're still getting that chance. And, you know, those are the types of guys that are like, hey, I've never won anything. I got a lot of talent. They have talent. But, you know, they knew they weren't going to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was an interesting time. That was special.
That's pretty good. Crazy to think about. You've also been on like a lot of winning teams, Southridge in high school.
Yeah.
You guys won, right?
Well, the joke is my parents didn't name me Darluz. That's brutal. I'm sorry. I said okay. I shouldn't have said that. Maybe
that's
we should,
a good one.
We should
had
cut
one of
that
those
from here.
Doing.
Yeah, like, oh, you're joke, a loser. So, no, but I've been very fortunate. You know, growing mm-hmm. up, I had a really good group of friends that mm-hmm. were athletic and that grew a lot sooner than they should have. And you know, we had a lot of success in let's see, in Little League, it was two or three state championships, maybe four in 5 years, four state championships. In Babe Ruth, we had two state championships and went to the Babe Ruth World Series 1 year. Never went to Williamsport. That's the one thing that I didn't get to do.
Boo-hoo.
Loser.
Yeah, I know. Loser. Let's see. After that, it was college. Went to Omaha all 3 years. Won a high school state championship my sophomore year with six starting sophomores. So that was that group.
That's crazy.
That group we had.
It's a very young team.
Yeah, two championships in college, you know, one or two in the minor leagues. And then, you know, finally towards the tail end of my career, I got some real, you know, playoff time with Toronto, but and LA Cubs. It didn't quite work out while I was there, but yeah. So winning, I think, is habitual. I try and tell people, you want to win in practice. You want to try to win in anything you do, because losing can become easy if you let it, and it's just a way of life, really.
Yeah. So what out of all those like teams, all the places you played, what's been your favorite spot? Like what? It, was it college ball? Was it going MLB or what team?
Well, that's easy, because once you turn pro, it changes.
Yeah.
It's like growing up and forgetting about Santa Claus.
Yeah.
You know, being that, you know, we're in December now, this will be played later, but
hey, don't tell people.
I know. Right? You know, it's like that. It's once it becomes your livelihood, some of the fun leaves and it turns more into all that drive and everything you've worked for your whole life, you know, that's what gives you the glory. It's the little things. It's getting a couple knocks and knowing that you spent your whole life working towards that. College, I would say, was by far the best time of my life when it comes to baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's rowing in the same direction. You know, when you get to pro ball, minor leagues, the guy that's next to you, you're competing with.
Yeah.
And you get to the big leagues, and with the Cubs, those teams that weren't winning, if you don't have a chance to make the playoffs, all you're playing for is your numbers, because you want to continue to play in the big leagues. So college was the purest time for us. You know, we were 80% Oregon kids, and we had a lot of pride in what we were doing, and it was pretty special.
I could see that. I mean, I think a lot of people are, even fans, they're just like, I enjoy watching college ball more so, just because everyone's working towards the same goal.
Yeah, you have, or there's still something
for,
in front of you.
They're like, mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas I feel like, in the pros, it is kind of individual.
Yeah, you want to get your contract or your extension, and you get one big deal, and you're set for life, so you're just working,
well,
and you'll step on anyone
kids.
To get it.
You know, you have families, and you spend your whole life. I mean, it's such a gamble. You know, if you get drafted in baseball, 3-4% make it to the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
The average career is about 1 year service time. Now, you think about, if you're a relief pitcher, you get drafted, you have a 4% chance to make it. Okay, you make it to the big leagues for 3 days. Now, we need an extra guy. This guy has to go down because he has options. Those first 2 years you're in the big leagues, you have options. So they can send you up and down, up and down, up and down. So now in a full year, you might have been up and down all year and accumulated 1 month of service time. So now you're 5 months away from even getting to a year of service time. The good thing is you get a pension at 1 day. You know, the baseball major league pension starts and increases every day that you're in the big leagues. So that helps. Those guys will get a pension at 5 days, 5 years. You know,
is that proportionate to their pay, or there's just like a stock price that they
get? It depends on when you retire, how many years you have. It gets set right then and there where it is. If a major league baseball player were to retire today with 10 years of service, which is the max you can take into your pension, I believe it's, you know, I don't know if we're supposed to talk numbers, but it's like upper, almost 300. You know, when you take, you know, when you're 54 or 56, you know, you're 250 to 300,000 a year, which is a really good retirement.
Absolutely.
Now, if you get half of that, that's still pretty good. You know, so every day and every year that you make in the big leagues, you know, affects the rest of your life, affects your kids' life. And
so that's why
just,
people step on each other.
That's the stress.
Wow.
That's the stress. I mean, there's a lot that goes into this stuff business-wise. Mm-hmm.
So let's fast forward a little bit. You have some children. You realize that there's life post-baseball. You're at a crossroads. You decide, I keep going, and I leave family again for another year, or I have a cool opportunity here in town, and you choose to stay. So what are you doing now?
Yep. I mean, you briefed that really well. You know, that 5-second brief was about 2 years of agony for me.
Glad we got that covered.
Yeah, about a couple years ago, I just got to the point where it was like, you know, I still love the game, but I think I love it less, you know, because I have, the guilt was growing. You know, anyone that travels for work, you realize, okay, I'm gone for 5 days from my kids. You have a little bit of guilt. Then you come home. Things are fine. The guilt goes away. You know, for me, I didn't come home for 8 months. So when the kids start school, you go 2 months at a time not seeing them. And that's twice a year. And that just built it. That built and built and built. And even when I was playing really well in 2016, you know, my dad's like, hey, are you enjoying it? You know, you're playing really good and, you know, you're locking up a few more years to play. And I was like, you know, I still feel the same. You know, I'm playing well. The stress is a little bit less, but everything else is still there. Like, I'm ready. So when that time came this year, where it was either, you know, go to the minor leagues for a couple weeks at the beginning of the season or not, I had already made up my mind to come home. You know, you miss so much with your kids that you can't get this time back. So, you know, that was a tough decision, but it ends up turning out that this Portland Diamond project is kind of lining up at the right time. Craig had called me before I even left for camp. Of course, I didn't even see the call or listen to the message, to be honest, until I ran into him when I got back. So, you know, he might have thought that I wasn't in, and then I ran into this guy right when I get home, and that kind of helped me with the transition of being done.
Yeah, so for those of you that don't know, the Portland Diamond Project is the group here in town that's working on bringing Major League Baseball here, and kind of the main person is Craig Cheek, who was a former Nike guy, and he's been doing this now behind the scenes and aligning the right people for the last couple of years now. And so, Darwin, you popped up probably about 2 or 3 months ago now, and kind of having, from an outsider's perspective, a bit of a community role and getting people that are familiar with you and local baseball in and kind of building buzz, and you're out doing stuff like this and just kind of being an additional face for the project. And what have you kind of felt as far as that community support so far?
Well, obviously the community is unbelievable here. You know, people in Portland and all around Portland, they're ready. You know, they want baseball here. And, you know, I've said it before that when you grow up, you like basketball. Man, I like football. Soccer is my favorite sport. But for some reason, men, grown men, little kids that grow up into grown men, they fall in love with baseball. And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the magic of it. Maybe it's the Kevin Costner movies. You know, I just, maybe it's the going to a ball game with your dad. Or maybe it was growing up watching the Braves or the Cubs because they were on the two channels that you got, you know. And that magic is part of America. It really is. It's you don't feel it anywhere else in the world for baseball. You know, they're trying in those Asian companies and or countries, and the Dominicans and the Puerto Ricans and Cubans have been doing it forever. But for them, it's more of a way of life. For us, it's magical, and I think that's what people want here. You know, they don't want to root for Seattle anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up a Seattle fan. I love Seattle. You know, I love the guys on the team. You know, I got some buddies over there, but. You know, I think we're ready. We're ready to do what we can. You know, I think the turnout has been unbelievable. So for me personally, what I try to bring is, obviously connecting the community with the Portland Diamond Project. But also I'm a traditionalist when it comes to baseball. Obviously growing up in the game, I don't quite care at the moment in exit velocity or spin rate or OPS. Right now I care about traditional baseball feel, and that's what I want to bring to the Portland Diamond Project, because we are very progressive here. You know, Portland is progressive. The people are. Our Portland Diamond Project group is. So as an advisor to the group, I kind of want to push-pull a little bit on some things and keep the tradition of the feel of baseball here and make a good mix with a lot of the progressive movement that we're making as well.
Mm-hmm. So the stadium renderings came out early December, and PDP, Portland Diamond Project, launched about 8 images and name-dropped Populous and an architecture firm and people that definitely know what they're doing in this space. Mm-hmm. So obviously with Craig and his background and seeing the alignment of these other companies, what we get asked in the store too is this project really going to happen? And my answer is always, if anyone's going to do it, it's this group and these people. Would you agree that in being in the game and seeing who Craig's kind of brought into the gravity, like, does it seem as if this is as close as we'll get and this is probably the chance?
Absolutely. I mean, I think I mean, I can ramble on here of all the reasons, and I guess I'll start with...
Go ahead. We got time.
I'll start with attendance. You know, the women's soccer team has the best women's attendance for any women's athletic sport in the world, which is really incredible. I mean, if you actually think about that, I mean, there's not a women's track team in, you know, South Africa that... No, I mean, it's just crazy that in Portland we're doing that, and that's a show of how progressive we are, really. And obviously the men's teams here, the soccer team and the basketball team, are killing it. They're on, like, records right now and streaks. With who's at the top of this thing, with Craig Cheek and Mike Barrett and, you know, the groups we have that are doing these renderings, you know, what I can say about that is the groups that are doing the architecture and getting everything right are people that have done 15 stadiums already. You know, they've worked with Major League Baseball. They are absolutely the right people. There's no one better that we could have on the job for this. And, you know, the renderings we gave everybody, they're almost like comics. You know, they're like cartoon pictures of what actually is being done, what the real work is. I mean, this has been months to years working on these things, you know, and what we gave the public, you know, was just enough almost. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot more work that goes into this than just drawing up those pictures. So I don't want the public to think that, you know, these are just cartoon character pictures, kind of like what Oakland threw out there. Mm-hmm. You know, we have detailed sketches. Yep. We are really working on this thing. And, you know, I think we're moving in the right direction. 2019 is going to be a huge year, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the guys at the top, the biggest difference now is we have some of the people from the previous groups to kind of help us with, you know, what went wrong, what worked, what didn't. It's money right now. You know, we have money and we have people that have money that want to support. Mm-hmm. And we are turning people away. Mm-hmm. In the past, we didn't have money. We wanted money. We needed public money. And I think the biggest turn when it comes to the public and their perception of all this is the money side of it. You know, hey, all we have to do is support and want this. Well, we already want that. Two, it's companies coming along and being a brand. Portland Gear is a great example of a brand that you can connect with this that will build our community towards something. And then there's a million others. So, I mean, people are coming out of the woodwork like, hey, we want to be a part of this. They mm-hmm. believe in it. And when you're having to shoo people away, you know, that's usually a good sign.
Yeah. So what are kind of, you know, 2019 is going to be a big year. And we just kind of, as Portland Gear, just helped the Portland Dime Project open up a pop-up shop down at 1919 Southwest Morrison. So there's some things to do there. But, like, what are a couple actionable items that we could leave people with to say, like, hey, you want to be part of this? You want to see something like this happen? Like, what are you guys talking about internally that you need the most help with? Or, like, how can people feel like they're part of it?
Well, I mean, the first thing you can do is you go to our store, obviously, the MLB to PDX store, or the Portland Gear store. I mean, people feel like they're linked. Mm-hmm. But I think building both of those brands will help build this in Portland. You know, the other thing is check out the website, sign the petition. You know, the more names we have on there, the better. I mean, I think, obviously, we have a ton on there already. The commissioner has been blown away by what we've been doing. And, you know, just the fact that the commissioner has been in talks with us and, you know, has us as the top one or two places to go, you know, that puts us in a good spot. So mm-hmm. if the funding is there, the renderings are there, the land is already there, the support is there, the commissioner is in line, I mean, all that's now to wait for is one of these other teams to kind of box it up or wait for an expansion team. So
sounds like a home run in my mind.
Well, you know, I just read something on Tampa, and Tampa has a few months. They have 3 months to figure out their situation, mm-hmm. and then they're moving.
Can they really move to the West, though? Or are we really waiting for Oakland?
My personal opinion is that would be a tougher move for MLB to approve, but they wouldn't. It's not out of the cards. I mean, you look around and see the teams that have moved. Teams have moved a long way. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe not in baseball as much, but in other sports they've moved. And the good thing is we're not holding on to their fan bases. You know, if Oakland moved up, we would love to have some of their fans, obviously. But I've been to opening day in Tampa, and we're far away. See, I'm not going to say anything bad about Oakland here. We are far away from Tampa. Opening day in Tampa was like, I told the rookies, I go, you guys are lucky. My opening day, I couldn't feel my body. I couldn't feel anything. I'm like, this place isn't even packed right now. You know, like this, the fan base is not going to be too sad if they leave. You know, they're obviously not showing up, which is which is why they're moving. So, you know, things are pointing in the right direction, and the right people are giving direction. So it's good.
What would you say is like the other city in the running right now? Like, is there another city right now that could be close?
Yeah, there's a few. Nashville is one, and to me personally, Nashville is probably the other good destination. Montreal,
heard that.
We played exhibition games out there, and we had 55,000-60,000
wow.
at two expos.
Because they used to have the expos before they went to become the Nationals.
Now, so their stadium is a dump. They would need a new stadium. You know, but side note, the 50-50 raffle in Montreal with 55,000 people got up to $150,000. Our whole team.
Were you having the bat boy go get you some?
Every guy in the dugout was like, I'll throw 100 on it. And we bought a million tickets. And of course, we never win. I mean, they probably just took our money.
Are you really allowed to do that?
Oh, yeah. You can do whatever you want. Yeah.
So, like, all literally the bat boy would go buy tickets for you guys?
Yeah, we would have like our travel secretary or, you know, someone like that that kind of runs the show inside the clubhouse. We would just build up the money and buy a ton of tickets, and
then you'd all split it if you got it. Or
did you
we would have
alias
it.
Names.
Well, that's the thing is, I think they were like, hey, the players want to buy these, and they were like, well, we're not going to let a player win. Just throw it in the pot. You know, like,
we'll got it.
I don't think we even got tickets. I mean, why would you give us tickets? Come on,
yeah,
that's true.
We're getting paid to play there.
But so let's say Nashville is the right place, or Montreal.
Which, does Montreal Stadium actually need to be updated? Like, is
Montreal
that a thing?
Would need to build
that was the worst, wasn't it?
They but
like, was the dome?
Is it because isn't there like problems right now with Chase Field in Arizona as well?
Several stadiums are having issues, so that's why it's just opening
that is
doors.
Another option we haven't talked about that I don't know how much the public knows about Arizona.
I mean, it was a statement that went public.
Okay.
As far as
other
Diamondbacks
team.
Looking for a new place.
The Diamondbacks are definitely an option. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I know that we've been in contact with somebody over there, but I don't want to.
We don't
know
that much.
Yeah. So but there will be.
There's a lot of things that, you know, I got to be careful.
But we do know that they're not willing to make the renovations at Chase Field.
And there'll be more cities. You know, you come out with these images, I have to imagine that cities that you wouldn't even expect right now. Well, and if they use us as leverage, which if you hear people say the word leverage, that's like, say, for example, the Blazers needed a new stadium and they didn't really want to leave. But they heard that Seattle wants an NBA team. They would send a little person up there. Maybe they'd send an email. And some ownership group would establish in Seattle and say, hey, we'll build you a stadium. You can come on up. And then that puts the pressure on the Blazers in Portland to be like, no, 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 no. We don't want to lose you. Okay, we'll finally build the stadium. So with the Diamondbacks or with probably many other teams, they're sitting there in a bad stadium or in a bad part of town saying, well, this Portland city looks really nice. That's a beautiful stadium. So we might leave there if you don't build us something. And then those cities are then pressed to have to raise more tax money or to get and
with
a
no
lot of
intention of ever leaving.
Yeah.
But
yeah. So some cities, I'm sure over the next couple of years, you'll hear even more teams come up and things. And who knows?
Maybe there's stuff we don't know yet.
I hope so.
Well, there's plenty that people don't know. But I will say that to throw another jab, Oakland has come out with renderings numerous times in the last 20 years. I remember when I was a player, maybe 5 years ago, I was like, oh, that's Oakland's new stadium. They're going to end up moving. Thank goodness. This place is a dump, you know, like, but then they never do because look at their location. It's not like you can just buy land out there. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we're getting to that point here even where, you know, our populace is growing so much, you know, but down there it costs more. There's more, you know, global warming effect in their location than there is on ours, and that's the kind of stuff we have to unfortunately take into account these days. So I think you know, it almost looks like Oakland is kind of doing a, hey, look, we're trying, but we're not really trying. You know, we did try fans, but you know, we're not going to fork up the money.
And it's almost like they came out with that right before the PDP on purpose, almost just to show, like, to keep their Oakland fans excited, because it was literally the day before you guys came out with the announcement. So it was almost like they came out with it. And then I saw on Facebook all my California friends posting, we're getting a new stadium, we're getting a new stadium, mm-hmm. to kind of suppress the fact that maybe they aren't.
Well, like in business, when you're going to throw in the towel, you have to make it look like you tried. So let's just hope that's what's going on.
And then lastly, so the stadium renderings came out, Terminal 2, which is a big slab of land down there on the river. Talk about that location and how important that would be to be an inner in the city stadium as opposed to mm-hmm. rumors of out in the burbs or something like that.
No, we definitely looked at a ton of different locations. We had people reach out to us. You know, even we're so grateful even for like the city of Gresham. You know, they were like, hey, come on out here. We have a good idea for you guys. And the group went out and not expecting much. And we left there like, holy crap, like this could really work out here. You know, now is the location ideal for people getting in and out? Probably not. But then obviously T1 and T2 were our number one all the way, mm-hmm. I feel like. If we could, you know, we're doing pretty good at securing T2, and T1 is well on its way. And if we can pull in 88 acres, you know, this thing will come to fruition how we want. And, you know, I'll address a couple things that I've heard that people are worried about. They're worried about how are we going to get there? How are we going to get in and out? But I can tell you that the city is on board. You know, the city is well aware that, you know, we're going to have to adjust some of these transit lines. We're going to make sure that people can get there with public transportation, and there's going to be some interesting parking across the water that you take a ferry over. You know, we've thought of all these things, and, you know, I think parking and travel and getting in and out isn't going to be an issue. You know, we're going to do everything we can to make that work. So, we're very excited about this site, and, you know, maybe some home runs going into the water over the left field fence, which is,
that's awesome.
You know, and there's a few fences like that in the league, but they're all on the right field side. So it'll be nice to be a little different. You know, and then there was some interesting ideas, you know, like Craig Cheek's idea, which is our, you know, obviously our founder. His idea was to put some roses, you know, on the wall, you know, kind of like Wrigley has the ivy. Mm-hmm. You know, we're the Rose City. You know, what if we had a fence of roses, you know, and that would be interesting. You know, to have like a red fence, maybe you just put it on top, maybe you just line the fence on top. Mm-hmm. But I think those are the kind of touches that we want that'll, you know, make it feel like a Portland stadium.
Absolutely.
We appreciate you coming on. It's awesome just to hear about the buzz and everything with baseball and your story. And if you want a pair of Hollywood teeth, just go to Dr. Barney and ask for Darwin's
Barney
smile.
Is retired.
Yeah, but your brother's doing
my
it now.
Brother
I bet he can.
Will now most likely do it. But dentistry's changing. These dentists these days, they don't even do root canals anymore. It's like, we'll send them off to a specialist, you know? And
so what does your brother really do?
Well, he does all everything,
cleanings?
Everything but root canals.
Okay.
You know?
So all the
well, if you've
good
ever
stuff,
had
I
one,
guess,
they used
right?
to saw down in there, right? Oh. It would be like, where now you go there and this guy has this laser-like looking thing and you don't even feel
sweet.
It. So you might as well send people out. But
yeah.
One more drop before we go.
Yeah, please.
You know, another reason that worked for me to retire was my wife is starting her business. Level Vitality, you can check it out at level-pdx. Is the dash the sideways or the diagonal?
Sideways. Dash.
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 What do you call the diagonal? Slash?
Backslash.
Oh my gosh.
Level-pdx.
Urban Dictionary under
idiots. Is it horizontal?
Yeah.
It's horizontal.
Yeah,
okay,
it's a dash.
Go to
dash.
What?
Level-pdx.
Horizontal-pdx.
.com?
I'm very happy to be able to be in town for her. You know, I was blessed with a wife that's not just content with being at home and, you know, living off of, you know, whatever I've made in my life. She's out there. She's doing her thing. Level PDX. It's interval training, running, workouts. It's in downtown Lake Oswego. It's for everybody. You know, it's hence the level. When you're running at your level and you're working off of that. But yeah, so I've been spending a lot of time, you know, doing that. Thought I'd throw it in there.
Good, please.
Are you one of our clients, or are you coming in and helping?
I worked out this morning.
Okay,
so
nice.
What level were you
at?
Well, my level pace today was a 6.0. which
sounds middle of the pack.
On the tread, it was definitely middle of the pack today. but it just wasn't one of those days where I was ready to just go kill myself.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the great thing about the class is anybody can take it from a 70-year-old woman to me, and we can take the same curriculum and get what we want out of it. But I'll teach, in the future, I'm considering teaching some classes with maybe like high school and younger kids.
That'd be good, yeah.
And it would be more geared towards focusing your athletic training for your future, the things you can do to not hurt your body, but to really benefit growth at that age.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the age I turned the corner, started having some biceps and, feeling good about myself.
Nice. But flexing in front of the mirror.
Yeah, it's a special time to learn how to work out
mm-hmm.
and to learn how to work out the right way. I think, technology and everything like that changes week to week, month to month. Foam rolling was the thing 2 years ago.
Now it's
the gun. Now you have to you have to have the Theragun now, and I can't live without that thing. But
it
just keeps changing, and I want to help these guys out eventually. But for now, I'm just in the classes getting my butt kicked.
Good.
Still foam rolling. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Darwin.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.